Hey, if you have a Bible, turn to Luke. Turn to Luke chapter 4. You know, it's so good to be back. I've got lots of things I want to tell you, but I'm going to kind of give you a layout of what's going next few weeks going to look like. We have a lot of things going on this time of the year in our church. We always have tons of things going on. So I wanted to kind of share with you here. We're doing this little series. Actually, DJ kicked it off last week, in this kind of just this thought of the church. What is the church? Who are we to be? I like to do it at least once a year because I'm convinced that where everything is headed now among the church, if you will, is not what the scripture says we ought to be. You know, it's an interesting thing when you talk about the church, when you hear people talk about the church, when you hear the world around us who don't have a clue talk about the church, there's always this similar chord that tends to go through it. And I want to talk to you about that in a minute. But here's what we're going to do. I'm going to do this today. I've got something I want to finish up. Well, you'll hear today next week. And then a couple of weeks from today, Pastor Charlie will be here. We'll all be in what, that's the Jamboree week. And Pastor Charlie will be here with us, and we'll all be here at the 10:45 service. We won't have connection groups. We'll still have the children's things that can be a part of. But, again, we just like to do that at the Jamboree time, give groups the opportunity to go out to the Jamboree after that and all that. But Charlie will be here then. And then we're going to do something real special that last week. Then we'll be telling you more about that. But so that's kind of the layout of what we do. But what do I mean do a series on the church? I don't think it's exactly what you think it's going to be. But I think we constantly need to be reminded about who we are and who we're supposed to be. Because everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a thought. But this little video shared it pretty clear. It shared that the church is you. And that is the truth. If you are a believer today, and if there's been something that's happened inside of you, and you put your faith and trust in Him, then you are the church. So, I've heard people say this statement: "Well, I think the church ought to be and then they fill in the blank, right? Well, the thing is, just go look in the mirror, right? If you think the church ought to be, then that's what you need to be doing. Why? Because you're the church, right? But see, most people, when they think of church, they think of some religious thing, or they think of some denominational deal. You know, whether it be Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, you know, it's that group, and they think of hierarchy, and they think of church politics, and remember, none of that is the church. Church is you. The church is groups of people, wherever they are. The groups of people that have banded together to fulfill the mission that's been given to them. It's that simple. It's not complicated. We only make it complicated by all the levels of hierarchy and all the different things that go on. But when you think about truly putting together groups of people who are there not just to attend, but they are truly there to band together to fulfill a purpose, to fulfill a mission. That is the key to who we're supposed to be. Another wave I've seen today of churches that churches are very much becoming production oriented. Therefore, the big deal happens on Sunday, right? Everybody comes in, you know, and a handful of people up here, you know, they come up with all the cool stuff and all the technology, all the stuff. And then there's this production. And then 95% of the rest of everybody are church critics. I don't mean that bad, but, you know, they leave talking about whether the service was good or not. Well, you know, he was a little off today, and you know, and the pastor, you know, he mispronounced, you know, several words. But overall, it was a pretty good. That's what happens. There becomes a critique of a production. Guys, that's not who we're supposed to be. It's not even close to who we're supposed to be. All right? We are not attenders. We are part of an organism. But I'm here to tell you, if you turn into only an attender, you will become a church critic. It just naturally happens. Why? Because you're not really doing anything. You're not exercising gifts. So really, as you're here, then your thought is, what's going on here? What does it make me feel when I leave? Do I feel uplifted? Do I feel, Okay, and understand, some of that is very important. I mean, I'm not downing those things. But the church is much more than that. And you'll see today. It's a mission. It's to be a light in a dark place. And what does that look like? You know, being a light is an amazing thing. The great part about the need for light is that what places need light? Dark places. Okay, these are not trick questions. I'm not trying to say I got you, okay? All right. Places that need light are dark places. And yet where the light feels most comfortable is when the place is already lit. Right? Let's just go to the places where it's already lit. Okay? Therefore, we have kind of caught on because we're going to take a look back at Jesus in Luke chapter 4. In fact, in John chapter 3, verse 16, you know, for God so loved the world. You go ahead and put it up there. For God so loved the world, you know, this is, he gave his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him would not perish for everlasting life. But verse 17, for God did not send his son. See the word send, sent. Therefore, God sent Jesus with a purpose. We're going to talk about that purpose today, and you're going to find out that that same purpose has become your purpose for being the church, if you're his today. Okay? It is who he's called you to be. It is what we are to be doing. It has to do with all those things. And you see, it's an amazing thing when you look just simplistically at what we're talking about today. And when you go back to the simple mode of who we're supposed to be and what we're to be doing, it will keep you on track and it will keep you fulfilled in here if you're a believer, if you're his. Let me tell you what I mean. I've made this statement all in all. I mean, when we do dealing with the pastor, I have the opportunity to speak to those that are new to our church. And I always tell them this. Because I grew up in a church that got off task. You know, a church can do a whole lot of different things. I've seen churches do a whole lot of different things. Some good, some bad, some good, but not really necessary, right? But I'm here to tell you, whenever a church, a true church, gets off task, that is off purpose, that is doing other things, they're in trouble. It's just a matter of time till they start squabbling with one another. Right? It happened in the church I grew up in. They got off task. And Lord help us. I remember being a young teenage kid, showing up at a business meeting. I don't know if you've ever been. See, I didn't hear much laughter. They had a little bit. Most of you know what I'm talking about. Well, when a church is off task, then everybody has an opinion of what they think the churches ought to be doing. Right? And they voice that opinion at the business meeting. And it usually turns ugly. Why? Because everybody's got a different opinion. But when you're being who he's called you to be, there's not enough time to squabble with one another. Why? Because we're all doing what he wants us to do, right? I never forget, 2.5 hours I sat. Boy, you talking about souring me as a kid? 2.5 hours, I said, as I've watched God's people yell and scream at one another over whether we were going to sell the church bus or not. They were off task. Does that make sense? They were off task, squabbling over things that didn't matter, because whenever you take your eyes off what does matter and put on what doesn't matter, it's incredible how what matters gets lost in the shuffle. Right? So who are we? I just like to do it once a year. If you've been a part of this church now for lots of years, you've heard me say this most every year I've been here. Because it's very important to me. When I stand before the Lord one day, when we all stand before the Lord today, I want to say, Lord, our desire was, I don't know if we ever were. We tried real hard. We wanted to be who you called us to be. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. And we're going to find out what Jesus came to do. It's very clear. You will leave understanding it perfectly. And then we're going to talk about how that has been passed off to us. You'll see that clear. And then next week we'll talk about what does that entail? What does that look like? So you're going to see some very simple things, very straightforward things. My desire is just simplistically let the scriptures just share with us as believers who we're supposed to be. What we're to be concerned with, right? And to not fall into the self-centered model of church today, where it's all about me and how it makes me feel. It is not who we've been called to be. Okay? It just is not. Now, so take a look at Luke chapter 4. Okay? Luke chapter 4. This is the beginning. This is the beginning. This is one of those rare snapshots where Jesus reveals it right at the beginning of his ministry. In fact, it is the kickoff. It is the coronation, if you will. It is him coming into. He's lived on this earth for 30 years, and he's going to begin just a 3-year ministry. You have to remember that all that Jesus did was just in between three and three and a half years, and so this is the kickoff to what he's about to do. And he lets everybody know at this little synagogue, much smaller than this room, perhaps only 100 people there, maybe less. Are the ones that he lets know that this is beginning, his hometown. And in Luke chapter 4, okay, if you want to take some notes, number one is just purpose. Purpose. Therefore, the purpose for why Jesus came becomes the purpose for why we exist. It was Jesus' idea. Jesus says, I will build my church. Okay? Jesus said, I will build my church. So this is his. This was his idea from the beginning. This was something that he was going to do. And this is something still today we strive to be who he's called us to be, not what we think we ought to be. Well, I think. In reality, it doesn't matter. Even me, it doesn't really matter. What is it? Now, how we fulfill those things, I think, is a lot up to us. You're going to see that with the parable of the talents in a few weeks. We're going to do something really special with you. Okay, really special with you here in a few weeks. Do not miss that. Don't miss any week, right? All right, but don't miss that one. Now, so as we look, and then who we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to be doing. Jesus starts it all out, and that's what I want to talk about when we talk about purpose. Jesus reveals his purpose in that God sent his son into the world. Therefore, he was sent. Jesus was sent. And it's all talked about here in Luke chapter 14. Take a look at Luke chapter 14 now and verse 16. Luke 14 and verse 16, it says this. It says, and he came to Nazareth. That's where he grew up, spent most of his time. You know, I have been to it several times, this area in Nazareth. And when, in fact, Nazareth today is a fairly large city comparatively. But at the time of Jesus, there were perhaps no more than 300 people, perhaps less people that lived in this little village called Nazareth. So when we're talking, there are many more times the number of people who lived in Nazareth that are in this room than there was there. So this was not a big deal, not like you would think in your mind. But let's continue to read. It says here, and where he had been brought up, and as was his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him, and he unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written. Now, this is where we've come to. Jesus had gone to the synagogue, and it was his kind of turn. They would have people read. They had different sections. A lot of times, there were different traditions among the Jewish people. They would read from all three different sections. They would read from the law, the psalms or the songs, the poetry part, and they would read from the prophets, obviously Isaiah being a prophet. The law was in the first five books. And so they would have these reading times just in their services, much like services that we have. They met on Saturday because Saturday is the Sabbath. And so they'd stand up. So it was Jesus standing. He went up, got the scroll, unread it, and he found Isaiah, and he turned over to Isaiah 61. And Jesus quotes directly from Isaiah, written some 700 years before Jesus standing there. Okay? 700 years before this, and that Isaiah wrote about what the Messiah would be like. Now, we're not going to go into all that, but here's what I want you to see. Here's what I want you to see. Listen to what Jesus read, and we're going to talk about it. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me." Okay, now, as you take a look at this, Spirit of the Lord's on me. So we're talking about a spiritual thing. We're not talking concrete here. We're talking about a spiritual thing. You'll see that in just a minute. Continue to read. It says, he has anointed me. The word anointed means to be given a charge, to be given power and authority to do a particular mission. The word anointed or anointed one, anointed me, anointed one, one who is anointed, that is where we get our word Messiah from. Or not our word, it's a Hebrew word, Messiah. The Greek word is Christ. Messiah and Christ are the exact same word. One's in Hebrew, one's in Greek. That's all it means. It means one who is anointed, one who is sent with a purpose. That is what the word Messiah means. See, we get these words in our mind and we religiousize them. I don't know if that's a word, but I made it up. I like it. We religiousize them as to being into a holy word. No. The word Messiah means nothing more than someone who is sent with a purpose and who has been anointed, or if you will, they have been given power and authority to do what they've been sent to do. That's what it means. And so way, way back, 700 years before, Isaiah comes up with this thought, or God gives this thought to him, and he begins to share that the Messiah was going to come. God was going to anoint someone with power and purpose to have a particular task. And here's what the task that he's going to do. That's why Jesus is reading from this. So he says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. Okay, can we put that back up there? Spirit of the Lord is on me and has anointed me to, okay, preach good news to the poor. All right, so this is part of what Jesus says the Messiah, the anointed one, Jesus is coming to do. It's part of his purpose to preach good news or proclaim good news to the poor. So if you'd like to take down notes, number one under this purpose is to proclaim good news to the poor. Now, good news to the poor, good news to the poor. Now, there's four of these that he's found here. We'll talk about them all. But I want to take long enough for you to catch on to what this is, because they're all basically saying the same thing. Don't get caught up so much in what the words are saying, but in the symbolism behind them. You'll see what I mean, because we're talking about a spiritual thing, not a physical. You'll see that in a minute. All right. Good news for the poor. Now, the word poor there. Yesterday, when I got back into town, I got up to my office and I started looking back over, because I love this passage. This is probably one of the most hope-filled passages. It encouraged me every time I read it. And so I went back over all the words to see what they meant. So what does that mean? Okay, can you put it back up there? All right, we have good news for the poor. Therefore, the word poor is our word for bankrupt. It's not somebody who just lives in poor. That is, they're making it, but they just don't have much. No. That's not what the word poor there means. The word poor means there to be bankrupt. Okay, what's bankrupt mean? Again, as we look at these things, once you begin to understand some of these words, it becomes very simple what's being talked about here. What does the word bankrupt mean? The word bankrupt, the true word behind bankrupt, is that you have debts that you are unable to pay yourself. If you can pay your debts, you are not bankrupt. If you say you're bankrupt and you're hiding money everywhere, you're not bankrupt, you're just lying. Okay? Nothing implied there. You can take it as you'd like to see it. But the word bankrupt means I have gotten so far in debt, I'm incapable of helping myself. Right? I need an outside source to come in and do something. Oh, now you're catching on. All four of these are the same. Okay? All four of the same. Okay. So Jesus, His purpose is to come, can we put it back up there? His purpose is to come to bring good news to those people. Those who are bankrupt. And we're not talking about financially bankrupt. Well, Pastor, how do you don't think he's talking about financially bankrupt? Because when Jesus came, he didn't come and give money out. Right? Jesus' desire was not to go around the world and find all those people who are financially bankrupt and bail them out. No. He had something different. We're not talking about poor financially. Oh, here we go. Who did Jesus said, blessed are the who? The poor in spirit. Those who have the wisdom to see that they're bankrupt in here. Nobody wants to admit they're a bad person today. But I got news for you. All of you are. Aren't you glad you came? All right? You found out just how bankrupt morally you really are. All right? Now, think about this. Poor in spirit. Why would Jesus say, blessed are those who are poor in spirit? Because if you have the wisdom to see that you're poor in spirit, then it makes the good news real good news. But if you can't see it, then you'll never see good news as being good news. It's an amazing thing. So I've come to bring good news to the poor. Question. To those who are bankrupt, I just want you, again, when you look at the Bible, just all you got to do is just ask. I found to take the simplistic road because the Bible's not complicated because common people read it every day. So God wrote it and had it written in such a way that some of it's complicated, but the greater majority of it is there to be understood. Therefore, as you ask yourself the question, what is Jesus meaning by this quote from Isaiah when he says, I've come to bring good news to the poor? Well, if you're financially bankrupt, I've got a question for you. All you got to do is ask yourself this question. What is good news to those who are bankrupt? Not a trick question. I'm going to pay all your debts. Okay? That's the best news you can hear. Can you imagine being financially bankrupt and somebody coming through who's been watching you and you didn't know they were watching you? And they write you a check that pays for every debt you ever had. That's good news, right? That's real good news. In fact, Jeff, what's his name and number? I'd like to give him a call. All right. Well, obviously, we're not talking financially here. We're talking about something else. Interesting. All right, let's put all this together. So Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me, and he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. Number two, he has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives. He's sent me. Now, obviously, we're not talking about literal captives here, but we do have a word here. In fact, if you have a different version, it will talk about prisoners. Now, it's the same word, captives, prisoners. It's fine. The only thing, the problem with prisoners here, I want you to take a look at this, is that when you use the word prisoners, you tend to think, and I tend to think of criminals. This is not what's being talked about. What we're talking about, that's why the word captive may come across a little bit better. Either word's still fine. But the word captive, what we're talking about here are those who, the best equivalent to help you understand would be like a POW, a prisoner of war. So then, a prisoner of war. What is a prisoner of war? Well, a prisoner of war is one who has been captured by the enemy, and they are put into a camp somewhere, and they have no way to defend themselves. They're obviously disarmed, and they're basically stuck there, usually not treated very well, usually oppressed. Okay? Now, I don't know about you, but there are certain things that are very important to me. I was raised to have a high respect for those who serve in the military and those who have served in the military. Always have been. I was just ingrained in me. I have never served myself, but if you know me, that's just kind of who I am. Now, I've also very much enjoyed reading, understanding those who have served, especially the common average person. And I tell you what, there is nothing. It'll bring tears to your eyes if you've got a heartbeat at all. When you read a story about someone who's captured and kept in a POW camp, And they tell you how they were treated. I mean, I've read several from World War II, some from Vietnam. I've read several accounts of different stories. And they talk about their treatment. They talk about their longing. They talk about their prayers. They talk about so many things, missing those. And then usually, because they're still alive, right? And then they talk about the big day. Let me ask you a question. What truly is good news for someone who's bankrupt? We just said it. Somebody's paying your debts. What's the best news that a prisoner of war can get? Been liberated. Being liberated. All right, put it back up there. Liberty to the captives. You got it? Now you understand what Jesus is talking about. These people have no help, no hope of helping themselves. They have to be liberated. Do you get the point? If you're not, you'll get it in a minute. You'll continue to get it. Of what Jesus is saying here. I've come good news. You know, we've religiousized the word gospel, which all it means is good news, which was number one. And in reality, the best way to say it is, it's good news to those who are bankrupt. All right? Interesting. Liberty to the captives. All right, so the Spirit of the Lord is on me. Right? Because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives. Number three is the recovering of sight to the blind. Recovering of sight to the blind. I think it's interesting, recovering. To recover means that it was something you had at one time. Okay? I think that's interesting. These are just things, just for you to think about as you look about. What is Jesus talking about? Recovering of sight to the blind. Now, we are obviously not talking here about those who are physically blind. We're talking about those who are, it's a spiritual blindness. It's those who can't see. And it's hard to understand when you can't see. But there is one thing, okay, when you ask yourself the question, what is it that a blind person needs the most? He needs to see. But remember this is something that he or she cannot do for themselves. It has to be done for them. It's a gift. Same, you see, as you're following what Jesus is saying here, it's the same concept. I'm telling you what, guys, I am telling you what. When somebody can see, it is so easy to talk to someone who can see. I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about somebody who's come to a point in their life where they've understood and they put their faith and trust in the good news that Christ has come to bring and has changed their life and they are able to see. And it's so easy to describe things, but it is so hard for those who can't see to understand. The people, have you ever wondered about some of the verses that we talk about at Christmas? The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about what it means to walk in darkness? It means to walk in blindness. It doesn't matter if you can see or not. If it's all dark around you, it doesn't matter if you can see or not because you can't see. But people walking in darkness have seen a great light. It's the same metaphor that is used 1,000 times to talk about the purpose behind what Jesus, who Jesus was and why he came. Okay? Recovery of sight to the blind. Number four. Is to relieve the oppressed or to set at liberty those who are oppressed. Again, just another word. The word oppressed there means liberty for the oppressed. In fact, Jesus, when he quoted this in Isaiah, the original, it talks about binding up the brokenhearted. It's similar in its thoughts. But the word oppressed there, I looked it up, it just means to be crushed with a burden. To be crushed with a burden. That is something that has been put upon your back that you are carrying. And it is way too heavy for you to carry. And it's crushing, it's overwhelming. And so really to relieve or to take off, this is this whole thought of Jesus when he said, I take my yoke with me, for my yoke is easy, my burden is light. So this is this concept here when Jesus would say that. But binding up the brokenhearted, liberty for the oppressed, however you want to look at it, here becomes the picture. Binding up the brokenhearted or here for oppression. If you were to take a vase, okay, very expensive vase, a very valuable vase. and you were to wing it down onto the ground, and it shatters into a thousand pieces. Okay? Putting that back together to its original form is impossible. Oh, yeah, you can glue it, you know, it doesn't really have it. And if it's broken enough, it doesn't matter. It's over. It's finished. I remember when when we were younger and our kids were very young. And Martha and I, it's interesting when you have, you know, I've always heard that when you have a house, you can either have nice things or you can have children. And so since we had four small ones, I remember the last valuable thing we had left in the house. And I remember what happened to it. Martha's grandmother made pottery. In fact, she just passed away here this past year. She was 101, wasn't she, hon? She was something else. And she was always active and always doing. Anyway, she made this pottery. It was beautiful. So we had it sitting up on the table. And we had a two-story house where we were before. And I forgot which kid it was. I wouldn't tell you if I remembered. But they pick it up and wung it over to the side. And smash. That was the last valuable thing we had in our house. All right. We determined from then on nothing else valuable in the house. There's just no point. And so, anyway. So, what does it mean to have those things shattered? And how do you put those things back together? Binding up the brokenhearted? Relieving the oppressed, the crushed? You need a touch. You need a miracle. You need something to happen. Has life become crushing for you? I know I'm speaking to you. Has it become overwhelming? Has it become something you can't handle? Well, guys, in reality, it's everybody at one point or time in their life. Or maybe it's a good chunk of your life. Depends on your situation. But this is what Jesus is talking about. I've come. That's the reason I've come. I've come to pay a debt that they couldn't pay. And all the rest of those. Okay? So when you look at this, this is why. This is Jesus' purpose. And we're not talking about physically as much as we're talking about spiritually. Something in here, bankrupt in here. So it's pretty an amazing thing when you take a look at it and when you see it. Now, number two. Number one's purpose. Number two is what I'm going to call impact. Impact. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 61. So we're going to go back. We're going to go back to, I don't want you to miss this. I'm setting some things up for you because you're going to, if you'll keep hanging with me, you'll see, you'll get a fresh vision of who we're supposed to be if you're His. And I keep saying that because I'm convinced so many people that have religious overtones but have never been impacted by the good news. You'll see all that in just a minute. Right, here we go. So let's go back to Isaiah 61. This is what Jesus was quoting from. When he walks into the synagogue, he takes the scroll, he opens it to Isaiah 61, and he quotes. You're going to see some of the familiar language when we read down it in just a minute. But in Isaiah chapter 61, it goes on to talk about impact. That is what happens when a poor person gets good news. What happens when a prisoner of war is liberated? What happens when a blind person can see? What happens when a broken-hearted person is mended? What really happens to them? That's why I've called number two, impact. The impact that the good news, the liberty, or the liberation has on a person's life. And you will begin to see more and more of Jesus' purpose, but also you'll see it bleed over into who we are and what we're supposed to be up to. Okay? So we're talking about impact here. Let's take a look at Isaiah chapter 61. Isaiah chapter 61, and take a look at verse 1. Isaiah chapter 61 and verse 1 says, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor." Sounds similar, doesn't it? Why? Because Jesus was reading this. Continue to read. "He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, the opening of the prison to those who are bound, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." So guys, what we're talking about here, and what was being talked about, which I didn't finish in the other one, is that we're talking about grace. We're talking about then we have debts we can't pay. All right, we're in prison and we can't set ourselves free. We're blind and we're going to need a touch or we'll never see. Or we're crushed or brokenhearted. And without another touch, then we'd have no hope. So that what we need is an outside touch. We need someone with the strength and the power to be able to touch from the outside to make a difference. There is nothing you can do. No matter how hard a person might work or many deeds he may do, it will not bring his sight back to him. If someone is truly bankrupt, there isn't anything they can do to pay their debts for themselves. In other words, there is a gift that is needed. That is why it's called grace, guys. That I'm here, Jesus said, to preach the year of the Lord's favor. You know, the Old Testament does not use the word grace much. In fact, I'm here to tell you, the word favor, the year of the Lord's favor, as it was in the verse. Basically, guys, it's come time now that God is sending the gift, is what basically that's saying. So when we talk about it at Christmas time, man, have we lost the idea of what a gift really is in our traditions around Christmas. When you truly understand the gift, you begin to understand how incredible it really is. The year of the Lord's favor. Grace, a gift. There's nothing you can do to pay your own debts off. You need a gift. Guys, that is why, look at me. That is why I will reject anybody, anything, any group that adds works to being made right with God. Whoever they are, whatever they call themselves, and they're everywhere. Those who want to add things that you do to pay your own debt off, right? Does that make sense? Why? Because the Bible is one that teaches that you need a gift. There's none righteous, no, not one. There's none who seeks after God, right? It says there, for by grace you've been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is a gift of God, not of works, so that you can't boast about it. Over and over and over again, and yet it appeals to the heart for us to think we can earn it. And that's why you have a whole host of people today that will teach you and to give you the whole list of rules of things to do to make yourself right with God when what you need is good news. Okay? Hey, if I give you, you know, if I give you this idea of all these things you could do, then, I mean, I know you owe $1 billion, but you'll earn an extra $100 a week. Oh, congratulations. But when you owe $1 billion, what good is that extra $100 a week? Right? You need a touch. Interesting. As we look at this piece, the proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, when we think about grace and what grace really means, when you think about amazing grace, how sweet the sound, when you think about really getting it, it changes the person's life. Let's see how. Take a look in Isaiah 61. So we've just read all of these things again. Isaiah 61, it says, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of the vengeance of our God. And here it begins to tell you the impact that the year of the Lord's favor has. Look at this. Comforting those who mourn. Continue to read. To grant those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes. There's so much symbolism here, and it's mainly Jewish, so it's hard to interpret. But ashes are what you put on your head traditionally, culturally, when you are in mourning, right? But a headdress is something you put on when you are celebrating. So that just helps you. All right, continue to read. The oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that you may be called the oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. These are all amazing things, but great impact. Take a look. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. So in other words, something that has been so destroyed, something that is in ruin, something that is absolutely mown down, remember this, there's going to be a change. I'm going to restore what was devastated. And guys, we're not talking about actual cities here. We're talking about people's lives. Therefore, I'm here to tell you, it has been one of the great joys of my life. Personally, yes, but also I've seen it happen in hundreds, perhaps thousands of people's lives. When they come into contact, when their eyes are open, when they put their faith and trust in the good news and have their debts paid, I'm here to tell you, it always impacts the life of the one who puts their faith and trust in the purpose of why Jesus came. And it just gives you all those great examples of purpose and then impact. You know, it's the most amazing thing to me. So what is a church? A church is a group of people banded together who have been changed by the good news. If you've heard everything I just said, for those of you who have ears to hear, to those you've been listening up to this point, if you haven't been listening up to this point, just go back to sleep. But if you've been listening up to this point, to those of you who have put your faith in the good news that he came to give you, it has impacted your life. Question. When a person's, all of his debts are paid off, does it change their life? Question. When a prisoner of war is liberated, is his life changed? Question. When a person is blind and they can now see, does her life change? Guys, I call it impact. And if you've been in church, I don't care if you've been in church all your life and your life has never been impacted, you have never put your faith and trust in him. Why? Because it always impacts. Always. And therefore, a church is a group of people that have been impacted by the purpose of why Jesus came. All right? Now, so we go on to the last one. You do know that I could spend a lot more time right there. I could give you examples of people I've known. I could give you examples of stories that people came by the guest reception last night to tell me. Oh, Pastor, let me tell you about my life. And they'll tell me a story of some incredible struggles and some devastations and how God changed everything. Not overnight, but began to change the direction and how those cities were rebuilt, figuratively. It's an incredible thought. I never get tired of hearing it either. Never. So anyway, like I tell you, I could spend more time on the impact. Number three, this is where we'll close. And just so you don't get nervous, if you're looking at your watch, this is only going to take a minute because this is where we're going to pick up next week. I just needed you to see is that Jesus' purpose has become our purpose. But before you understand our purpose, you needed to see his purpose. Now, Jeff, are you sure that why he came has become our responsibility? Absolutely. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. It is clearly stated what we're to be about. Let's look at it. It's one of the great verses in the Bible that are quoted often. Here it is. It says, therefore, if anyone's in Christ, that is, if anyone who's ever put their faith and trust in the good news, right? They are he is a what? You're brand new. Your life has been impacted. I mean, how much more can a verse tell you that when you come to him, that your life's going to be impacted? It even goes on fast to say, the old's passed away and the new has come. In other words, God is at work to doing a new thing. Brand new you. It may not feel like a brand new you right now, but I'm here to tell you, it is a brand new you. You'll begin to see what happens. Interesting. Now, a lot of times we just stop reading at verse 17. Oh, isn't that great? New cry, new life, you know, new creation, old things festival. Okay, great. But we fail to take a look at verse 18. All this is from God. Well, that makes sense. All right? This was his plan. His purpose for who Jesus, the reason he sent Jesus. Okay, all this is from God, who through Christ has reconciled us to himself. Okay, so we understand that Christ has done what he has done because the Father sent him and the work that's accomplished. But have you ever looked at this last piece? But he has committed to us this ministry of reconciliation. You ever thought about that one? So his purposes become your purpose, our purpose. When Jesus said, I will build my church, no one owns his church. He owns his church. No one has a market on his purpose. It's his purpose. Okay, don't miss this. Don't miss this. So since he's committed this to us, then this is what we are to be about. We're going to talk more about this next week. But I don't want you to miss a couple other things that let you see it. John chapter 20, verse 21. Jesus said to them, this is the very end of his life. Jesus said to them, peace be unto you. The Father has sent me. Now I'm sending you. Okay? In other words, I've been sent. And now I've done what I've been told to do. Now you carry on with it. And then the one that is so clear is 28:18. This is, many people call this the Great Commission. Okay, but to me, it's the great purpose behind the church of why we even exist. And Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Now you go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. Now, so he's come to say, listen, I've got all the authority. Therefore, I'm giving you the authority to do and to finish what I started. And now, I promise, I'm just about to be done. But I've shared a whole lot with you. Next week, we're going to talk about more of what that looks like. How that looks. And the impact that it has on us about being about what he's called us to be. This is not just spectator stuff. This is not just attendance. Okay? I want you to attend. Don't get me wrong. That attendance is important. But it's about being a part of something. Not about just attending something. In fact, the scriptures are clear. In fact, that's the one thing that scares me so much, because that is the wave of where everything is going. Okay? Is we focus totally on the production on the weekends. That is not who we are supposed to be. We are to be about, as Jesus said when he was young, my Father's business. Therefore, that's who I'm to be. Now, what does that look like? Well, we've talked about it because it looks different for everybody because everybody's different. Because the scripture talks about a church being a body with many different gifts and many different abilities. But it is using those gifts, abilities, talents, treasures, whatever they are, and then putting them all together in one unit to function as being a light in a dark place. We call it live sent. Why? Because Jesus was sent, and now we've been told now we're sending you, so we need to live as if we're sent. Therefore, everywhere we are to understand that we are to be a light. And I'm bleeding over into a little bit of next week. We'll talk a little bit more about this next week. But what is it? Now, I've already asked you this. But where is it that needs light the most? Places that are dark. Okay? So if God has you at a workplace, we talked about this a few months ago, you're the only believer, and you're saying, oh God, this job is like hell itself. If you could just put me in a job where I'm surrounded by believers. Well, you know, have you ever thought about the possibility that it's the darkest places that need the light most? And that perhaps God has you in a place that is so dark because light shines the brightest when it's the darkest. Does it not? Right? It's an amazing thing to think of. I got to stop. All right. Done. All right. But here's where we're going to pick up next week. Again, I just once a year like to remind us who he's called us to be.